Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Oh my goodness, wait for this, everybody. What a great show we have. You know, I want to introduce you, if you don't know who Anahata Roach is, if you don't know that she is one of the most sought after, the crystal coach. This is somebody that has said yes to a passion and a purpose that goes far beyond the words that we're going to be able to express today. You know, when you think about her therapist for over a decade, and you think about what she has integrated in terms of her knowledge of crystals, the energetic form of those, the stones, what she does to bring things in, whether it's students that she teaches, whether it's one-on-one, whether it's group, it doesn't matter. Integrating her entire life's journey and who she's become to be here today is what this show's about. But like so many of us, you're going to get to know her, but you're going to get to know her in a different way. Because this episode is about finding joy by escaping from fear. And I mean that because if you know a little bit about fear, not at the intellectual level, not there, but if you know about fear at the psycho-spiritual level, then what you understand, fear, anxiety, depression, overwhelm, frustration, anger, you just pick your poison, whichever that one is. If you know that, then the question then becomes, how do we escape from the prison of it? Because fear, the many shades, I like to call it the 50 shades of fear, those 50 shades of fear grab a hold of you. And whether they're heavy shackling chains that are wrapped around your neck or a tiny little bungee cord, it's still pulling at you. Today, you're going to hear about an inspirational journey about what does it mean to understand, one, you are a prisoner, and then two, do something about it. Anahata, thank you for today. Thank you for this topic.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. And before I begin my story, I'd really like to acknowledge you for overcoming your own fears and programmed limiting beliefs to follow the divine direction that set you on your path to create the Transformation Talk Radio Network and guide others whose voices need to be shared. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Yeah, thank you so much, because I got to tell you, you're right. I mean, you know, when I think about the prison of, you know, the fear that imprisoned me. Of course, my first show was about crust busting because the crust around me, the limitation, how I felt depressed, you know, on paper, I shouldn't have felt that way. I should have had everything success, the top of my game. That's not what was going on inside. And so we are both here on a mission. Mm-hmm. You know, I was helping somebody this morning and with their one-page book proposal. And I said, why is this important now? And here's what we reflected upon. It's great to think that we've just gone through 3+ years. No, it's not 2 years, people. It's not. They're 3+ years. And even today, we're masking up. Without understanding the fear, the anxiety, and the biofilm that has encapsulated our fear, protected it, so that we just don't know where to begin. And that's why you're talking about this today. Tell us about your freedom journey.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Well, you know, all of us, as you touched on, have faced fears in one way or another. Fears of not fitting in or being good enough. But be it physical, emotional, mental, environmental, economic, mental, spiritual, whatever. We all go through this life with some type of adverse experiences that shape who we are. My story is actually from the cultural perspective of Southern white privilege. As a child, you know, if you think of fear as, you know, fearing for your life, I never experienced that my life was in danger. But what I did experience was different aspects of fear that didn't relate to constant life-threatening, but the experiences of projected fears of my parents and cruel teasing at school. And that formed the basis for my limiting beliefs that ultimately blocked my ability to feel joy. And I didn't even realize it. I grew up in a loving but very dysfunctional home and had lots of joy as a very young child. I've got memories of running like a pack of feral dogs with other neighborhood kids along, you know, in the backyards where there were no fences. But something shifted as my middle sister came into the scene. It had to do with finances, I believe. I didn't know, but all I knew was that more and more my mother and dad were having arguments and shouting matches in the kitchen when I was put to bed. And as it got more and more intense, I felt anxiety around whether or not, you know, my folks were breaking up. So it really kind of took its toll on my dad and my mom. Daddy, he used to have evening cocktails, right? And the pressure of trying to cope with this financial, whatever circumstance or situation they were in, he eventually grew into this functional alcoholism. And it really shaped my childhood because mother was kind of enabling that by pretending everything was okay. I was the eldest, so I was a fixer in the family, and I actually became very hypervigilant. Here he is, hypervigilance is a fear, right? To the signs of anger from my dad, because he really did have a hair trigger temper. And so, you know, I wanted to try to keep my sisters safe. But to the outside world, we looked like a perfect family. And for me, I took on this responsibility of everything had to be perfect. And of course, we know that there's a lot of imperfection in this world. And so as I was doing that, then in the first grade, that's when I had this experience of becoming an outcast. And I didn't understand. My appearance apparently was deemed worthy of laughter as my face hadn't quite grown to my ancestral nose. And Anna banana nose, Anna banana nose. You know, that was the chant. And I began to feel ugly and unworthy and not enough. Yeah. I actually would come home crying every day. You know, teasing creates self-consciousness and a fear of being seen. Kids can be so cruel, can't they?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? You know, people ask me why I go by the name Trish. All of my close friends, Linda, that's what you'll call me. Because growing up, you're either Fat Pat or Fatty Patty. I mean, you know, kids are cruel. It's fascinating to really look back. You know, you became the protector.
Yes.
And I think about that because my sister was the same, but it was too much for her. You know, it took her toll. She was 12 years older than me. So she took the burden of an alcoholic mom, drug addict mom, you know, who back then, that's what you did. When women were too feisty, you gave them drugs, prescription drugs. But here we are, we emerge from that somehow. It's not that we emerge unscathed. Okay, that's not it.
No.
But there are many of us that have been trapped in fear. Why do you think that is? You know, I'm always curious because I talk to people and they say, well, if you think it was bad in your generation, you should have been there for mine. And I get that because I think we've evolved to understand some principles about humanity and how to treat children now. Right. You know, beating them in school is not the idea.
Right. But that's what kind of was our norm, you know, when we were growing up. You know, I want to, before we get to the second question, I just want to say that if I fast forward, after I graduated high school, there was no option for me. The program was I was expected to go to college. and get trained to have a career. There was no other, I didn't even think of that I had any other kind of option to do, because that was the program, right? Mm-hmm. And so they had, my parents had set that in motion, and I just went right with it, right? So, in corporate life, I would have never, if you had told me that at one point or another, I was going to be this metaphysical energy coach or holistic practitioner, are you kidding me? I mean, I drank the Kool-Aid, baby. I identified first as my job and title and my company, second as my husband's spouse, third as my son's mother. What's missing there? That's the day that I had the spiritual experience that changed everything. So that's why, you know, I'm here today. Now, as far as the fear aspect that you asked me about, you know, why are so many of us trapped? I really have a theory about that. Fear is a dense 3D energy. You can literally feel it go through you, right? Have you ever been at a traffic light and someone next to you has music blaring and the bass level up so high that even with the windows up in your car, everything's shaking?
Yeah, that's probably me. That's probably me in that car.
Well, but that's the equivalent of how fear goes through you. You know, it's a dense vibration and it's easy to access. So, you know, look around. I mean, everywhere you turn, you see, or on the news, in the media, the social media, the advertisers, there's a content of conversations around the dinner table that are filled with fear. And if you grew up with fearful programming, like I did, like you did, it makes it all the worse, really. You know, for me, I grew up with this fear of judgment from others, and that feeling that I wasn't enough or as valuable as others, right? So, I mean, God love him, my father did his best to empower me by discouraging me from what he did, because I wanted to go into what he did, was advertising. Mm-hmm. He said, oh no, you don't want to do that. And, you know, he and my mom put me through college. I mean, God bless her, mama taught, she taught piano at home, and her piano money sent me to college. Mm. You know, they wanted me to be more successful than they were, but their fears were projected onto me. And it was really hard to hold that responsibility. You know, this is a crazy story. I actually know someone, speaking of parental projections, I actually know someone who is terrified of getting on an elevator by herself. Not because she had some kind of traumatic event, but because her parents were so afraid that she would have some kind of like attacker or who wanted to rape her or kidnap her or something if she was alone in an elevator. That's an extreme example of how fears get trapped.
But it's so real though.
And you become imprisoned by them. I mean, she was literally imprisoned by this terror of being on an elevator by herself.
There's no question about it. I mean, growing up in New York City, there's so many things that when people from that don't live in New York, they look at New York and even New Jersey, and they look on the outside and they look in and they take a look. And there are other cities, Detroit, Chicago, but my experience is New York. And, you know, when I hear people that haven't lived there talk about New York, so one, am I desensitized? To have I been able to navigate the streets and the system safely? You know, what is it that enables me to look at caravanning in New York City as fun and other people as their worst nightmare? And I think it really depends on the embedded stories. I have, like you, there are so many of us that have been put in a mindset to be afraid of one thing or the other.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you can see it, you know, you can see how coming off of the past 4 years has changed the way we interact with each other, a level of fear, but stories like that everywhere. I mean, like you, I had a friend who couldn't go up an escalator. And I'm telling you, if you're living in the city, there's escalator, like everything's like an escalator. And she never had an experience herself, but she saw her mom's coat get caught in the escalator deal. right? A long raincoat. I think it was the belt or something. I don't even remember. And it didn't stop. And so she saw that experience and forever was tainted. I mean, in order for her to get on the escalator, and of course, if you're at the airport, you're not dragging your luggage. It's really an event. But these are the things that happen on our journey through life.
Right. It's right? Just everywhere. That's why, you know, it's so easy to vibrate with fear, because it's a dense visceral frequency.
Yeah.
As opposed to love, for example. You know, I feel really like we have two choices in this lifetime. We can choose fear or we can mm-hmm. choose love. Mm-hmm. Fear is easy because it's all around you. Love is this, it's like gray smoke, you know, trying yeah. to hang on to it. Right. or an intake of breath. You can find a way out. I did, which is why I'm, you know, the realization I had that I had lost my joy was from that spiritual experience I had, but the getting the impetus to face my fears and, you know, try to eliminate them or to dissolve them or to replace them.
Yeah. Just get to cut out the pathway to freedom. Aren't we we're talking about a prison.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you're little, you may not have a conscious thought about it. You may not even have any kind of remembrance of that, but your body remembers, and your little girl, your little one inside you remembers exactly what happened and where it's stored in the body. And this is the kind of work that I do, that I help to identify yeah. where it's stored and then like delete it.
Yeah. But let's just talk about that. I mean, clearly you're a storyteller and we're going to tell more stories today, but you know, part of your work and what you do to help people, it's not just gleaned from, you know, some textbook. Of course, it's the beautiful way that you've created this tapestry of modalities and tools to help people, whether it's going to be Reiki, you know, your Reiki master, multiple levels of Reiki, just a spiral practitioner, NLP, integrated energy therapist. I mean, you know, it goes on and on. And the reason that this happens, like I always get asked, geez, Pat, you know, are you going to get any more credentials? I mean, why are we on a pathway to get these certifications? Well, we come from a place where we know the value of tools. But the other thing I think, and I want to ask you about this, this isn't a one size fits all. That's the message for people. All y'all out there listening today, that if you're wondering why this entire network has so many talented people, or why, Anahata, for you, you have tools in your toolkit, it's because we're not all the same. And it's like you were just saying, you find out what it is that's going on in a person, and then you do your own version of removal of it. Because in order for us to really address the possibilities of healing in modern day society, I mean, don't you need like a big toolkit here?
Oh, absolutely. You need a big toolkit. And I am quick to say that I do not do that. The client does that. It's the intention.
You're so modest.
The want, the need to be it. Live in a different way, be a happier person, or to not feel that kind of fear again. That's the intention. And that going into that is what actually shifts the energy in a way that can just delete it. It's really incredible.
You know, I want to ask you this question. You know, as we go through and we understand that there is something going on, the first step, everybody will tell you, the first step is awareness, okay? But we don't really understand the importance of that. The importance of having an awareness that you are being shackled by your fear is by really stopping for a moment and asking yourself, what would you do if you weren't afraid of this?
Exactly.
You know, would you bake that cake? Even if you thought, I've never been able to bake in my life. I'm the worst baker. I'm a great cook, but honestly, I can't even cook cookies. And I know that. I'm not afraid to do it. There's just something about my makeup that just doesn't get that process very well. If I tried, I'm sure I can do it. But in life, we won't apply for a job. We won't reach out to a friend. We don't want to be rejected, right? We may not take an adventure, learn how to ski, participate in something fun. Sometimes we're even afraid to really look beyond what we know and what we can count on. Mm-hmm. And I think these are the things that create the prison bars.
Oh, absolutely. The ego. The ego is the that which it's the inner critic that tells you, oh, who the hell do you think you are trying to do something like that? That'll never work. You're silly. You're stupid. You're dumb. You know, all of the hatred that is spewed in your mind towards yourself. Yeah. That's where these fear programs kind of work in. And of course, the ego is happy to substantiate the fear because it lives in fear. It's afraid of dying. It dies with mm-hmm. the body. The soul's eternal. There's the love there. You know, we come from love. We return to love. We are love. The joy that we can have access to is shunted by this dense, blocked energy of fear. Mm-hmm. And the more you can, kind of pull out those threads of fear, the more space there is for joy to come in.
Yeah. And this is really why we're talking about this today. One of the things that I've seen, and I'd love for you to comment on this before we go to break, is once upon a time, as I've been told, somebody told me, I think my parent, my mom, my dad, my grand, I don't know, somebody told me that the things to be afraid of were more evident to us. And so what were they saying? You go back a generation or two, you know, let me just tell you this. One day there wasn't a cell phone. And I think in 1991, there was cell phones. And I worked at the phone company. So I understood this intimately, the birth of the cell phone. I really did. Back then, I worked at Bellcore, which was instrumental. Bellcore was an offshoot of AT&T. And contrary to where we are today in the world, those systems were designed. That software was designed by the old Bell companies. Mm. Nobody replaced those systems. And so we watched this. So here's a story for you. Boardroom, I work for executives. Erwin Doros, the vice president, Bellcor, the research. These are the people that designed all the software for every phone, cell phone. I don't care like what you're talking about. I'm at a board meeting because my boss wasn't there and they're discussing caller ID. We don't think we should put caller ID. US West, which was US West at one point, they want us to include caller ID software in the launch of the cell phone. And I listened to them go around the table and they were arguing that caller ID would be an absolute no for women. It would be the most hated feature on the planet. They were all men. We're in the boardroom. Just the most ridiculous thing we could ever do. Women are not going to want caller ID, blah, 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 blah. And I'm in the room. So Bob turns to me, one of the VPs, noticing I'm a woman. And he looked and he said, wait a minute, let's ask her. And you could hear a pin drop. And he asked me, he said, we're doing caller ID and we're discussing whether or not the phone that's calling you should show up on caller ID.
As if you hadn't heard the rest of the conversation previously.
And he said to me, what do you think? Is that a stupid idea? You know, Erwin is saying women are not going to want. I said, to the contrary. I said, you're living in a world where you think women are sitting at home and they're doing nothing. But that. And I said, do you know how many calls, even if that's true, even if you're talking about my mom, do you know how many calls my mom picks up on that phone that she wishes she would have never answered? Of course we want caller ID. Of course we want to know. And I turned around and I said to them, and he said to me, well, what about people you don't want to pick up? I said, just block their numbers. Interesting. right? That I happened to be in the room that day, because you listen to 2 hours of fear notes on what they thought women would not want and be afraid of. And that's just one typical example how fear infiltrates everything we do, every marketing, every bit of advertising. Look, just watch some of the late night channels that, you know, are positive, let's say. And every commercial is about a pill, potion, or lotion that you need to be aware of and take, something you need to inject in your body, because if you don't, it's going to get you.
Right. That's what I was saying earlier about advertisements are all fear-based. Marketing is fear-based for the most part.
And they make them fun, though. I mean, it's so brilliant. So when we come back, I want to talk with you about how do we rip the veil? How do we rip that mask off of fear to see it for what it is? And then to flip it on its head to show it its place that it needs to go for us to experience joy in life. Because that's what you've done. So let's just take a minute. But before we go to break, how do we find out more about you? Just give people lots of information, right? You're intuitive, you're a teacher, you're an author, you're a speaker. But we need to know how to get a hold of you and connect with you.
Sure. My website is https://thecrystalcoach.com. And what I do and all the services I offer are listed there. And how to get in touch with me is also there. I'm available for 30-minute free consultations, and you can book them through my website as well.
All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, let's think about that.
Got it.
Whether you know it or not, multidimensional nature, to remove the prison bars from your frequency, from your energy field, is a multidimensional approach. It can't just be the mind. It can't just be the body. It has to be mind, body, emotion, and spirit, and then some. When we come back, Anahata is going to take us on a journey to her pathway to freedom for herself and others. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Are you looking for a peaceful sanctuary that will relieve you from the stress and anxiety of your life? Deb Phelps, founder of Peaceful Wellness, provides a safe and accessible place for you to explore what services are best for you. Deb offers free meditation guidance, sound healing, private coaching sessions, and more. Start your journey towards peaceful wellness. Book a free discovery call at debphelps.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Dr. Pat Show. Anahata Roach is joining me. Look, before we go, again, would you please tell everybody the website? It's thecrystalcoach.com, right?
Correct. Yes, thecrystalcoach.com. Real easy.
Yeah. Many, many things. But most importantly, we deserve the pathway to freedom and joy. We really deserve that. I don't think anywhere that I've read in any one spiritual path, including Buddha, where we end up deserving suffering. Mm. It may be a stage, right? Mm-hmm. My boss used to say, you know, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. I never understood that until recently. But in the world we live in, We have years and years of life that we experience. We have things like you talked about, like I talked about. And they don't always show up in an ordinary way. They show up in different ways. Sometimes they're insidious. Sometimes they're small. You think they're small-minded. Other times they accumulate. But they come from a base of something, right? I was talking to Linda. We got a bunch of snacks for our producers in the office, right? So I just went on Amazon. I got them. And some of them, the packages looked too small. So I got like two or three. Apparently, they got a load of food that came into the office, right? I'm working remotely on a project. So for Linda, they're all in Linda's office. And we were talking about it. And Linda said, are you going to do an inventory? And I said, no. And she said, well, don't you think we should do an inventory? And I thought, should I do an inventory? What would make me do that? Now, my finance person would say, Pat, you need to be a little bit due diligent and do a dang inventory to find out what you got and how fast everybody's eating them. And Linda comes from a place, how are you going to monitor it? How are you going to monitor it? How are you going to know when you need to reorder? Are there going to be guidelines? And I'm like, no. And so somehow each of us brings a level of fear, albeit diminished, that looks like concern. But if we didn't have fear and concern, what would the situation look like? What has been your experience of going through the journey of things? I know for me, I'm like you. I had an experience in the desert in 1997, and I wasn't the same after it. I can't explain how, but everything changed for me. I wasn't afraid anymore to stay on a career path that I could not stand. Yeah. I couldn't do it. But what was your experience like? You know, how was this journey movement for you?
Well, the genesis of my awareness that I was being led someplace else was when I was still in corporate, and I was attending a weekend team building retreat. I learned that there was a labyrinth on the property. So I was curious about it. I asked what it was for. I'm sure many of our listeners today will know what a labyrinth is, but for someone like me who had shut down that part of herself, I really hadn't a clue that it's a spiral-shaped pathway that's used for meditation and contemplation. So you walk in with a question to ponder, you sit at the center and wait for the answer, and then you contemplate that download as you leave, right? And that sounded really good to me, as I had felt kind of stuck and unhappy for many months, and I didn't know why. Because I had everything that I had ever thought I was supposed to have, right? The next morning, I rose at dawn and dressed and went out to the labyrinth. The dew was heavy on the grass, and my shoes became wet before I even got there. But the place was so magical. It was nestled like into the back of this wooded property. And there's this expansive stone-lined circular-shaped path. The sun was just coming through the trees, and it lit up the dew like crystals. They were just sparkling. So I took a deep breath and said, why am I not happy? Well, that was about all I could think to ask as I started walking slowly in towards the center. Am I not happy? And so I got to the center. There was a stone bench. So I sat down and I waited for an answer. And I didn't have to wait very long, really. I heard a voice said, well, you know why, and you know what to do. Do? Find your joy. Find my joy. Thanks for nothing. Well, I have my answer. So I got up and I started walking out. So find your joy. What does that mean? Find your joy. About halfway through, it occurred to me that I had lost my joy. The feeling of that unconditional effervescence that I had in childhood was gone. I had successfully run that program that my mom and dad had given me. I'd pursued the American dream. I get a college degree, develop a career, get married, have kids, buy a house, buy a car, host parties, all the things, right? That will make you happy. But I wasn't happy. So someplace along the way, I gave up my access to the joy I knew as a small little one. And gosh, the grief of that loss just came crashing down on me. I literally was sobbing as I was leaving the labyrinth. How do I find my joy again? That's what set me on my path where I am today. I mean, I help other women rediscover their joy by identifying and eliminating the root cause of the fears that keep us trapped and stuck in their heads. Now, that was my divine kind of, this is your path, kind of a moment. But I had so much work to do, Dr. Pat. I had so much work to do to get to the point where I could help others. You know, I had to climb up that horrible ladder to get to where I could pull others up out of that hole of unthinkable unworthiness and unforgiving thoughts. You know, there's a lot that is entailed in. And this is why I have Sudega many certifications, because it was like I opened up this path for myself and I was like, okay, how do I do this? And it was like the hungry caterpillar going nom, 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 everything I could get my hands on. I was reading all the spiritual books. It was weird. It was like Reiki kept coming up in my field. I'd never even heard the word before, you know, and then I was seeing it in magazines, on newspapers, and television and radio were doing art, you know, stories about it. Like, what is this? And it's like, you know, just the universe said, here, take my hand. You were going over this way. And that's kind of how it's been. And as I learn things, then, you know, you have to use this new skill on yourself first, right? Before you share it with other people. Otherwise you're just dumping your own stuff onto somebody else. Right.
Yeah.
So,
and we're the ones that know. I mean, you know, I love the way you shared that story. What a beautiful story. I mean, you're such a great storyteller. I mean, part of this is, though, you know, what you're talking about is so relatable. And let's just stay with this for a minute. I couldn't be where I am today had I not had that 10-day experience with my mentor, Sidonia Cahill, in a desert doing a vision quest, which I actually didn't want to go on. I was sent on it. And when you go through that experience, you have a new level of awareness. So that's the first thing. And hopefully you go through working with someone like you and you're able to shed a little bit of your skin. There's a reason the snake is my totem. I have rattlesnake skin over on my altar. There's a reason that was given to me. You know, I never really understood it until much later. But we have to have a level of awareness. And let me ask you about this next thing. Once we're aware, there's something else that happens. And we're at a choice point now. We can be aware and still be ignorant. And what I mean by that is we can be fully aware and not know that there's something we can do about it.
Right.
Right. And in order to do it, you have to face yourself. You really do.
You have to get out of your comfort zone.
You have to get out of your comfort zone. And let me ask you to talk to this. You have to get out of the denial frequency that says it's all good. No. Getting beat every night in Catholic boarding school, and that thing, that was not all good. Okay. And this is where we are. How do we help the audience today know you're perfect? You went through an experience, but we have to face these in order to know how to pinpoint what needs to heal, right?
Right. Well, we can't make anybody do anything. The only people that we're responsible for is ourselves. Mm-hmm. But if those of us, those who are listening to us, feel a resonance around, oh yeah, you know, I've always known that I was, you know, my biggest number one thing that's holding me back is my feel that I'm not good enough, you know, that kind of a thing. If that's resonating with you, you don't have to stay playing the same record all the time for the rest of your life, right? You can like pick up the needle and put it on a different song. You know, it doesn't have to be the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. The mindset of, well, this is my lot in life, is that's just like eliminating any kind of option or choice that you have free will, right? You have free will. Every one of us on this planet Earth has free will. We can choose. We are co-creators with the universe. But it's our thoughts and those program thoughts that keep us locked into a way of perceiving our lives.
Yeah.
That, heck, if we could just make a 1 degree shift in how we think about ourselves, we're going to be in a completely different place. Mm-hmm. The trajectory takes you in a completely different place. So it was really amazing for me, like as I was working on my, my own issues and things that were, you know, coming up for me, the more I realized that I was enough and, you know, I could feel and feel gratitude, the easier it got. I mean, my outer world kind of reflected what I was believing, what I was projecting, right? Before, I never expected any kindness from anybody else. I never expected anybody to even see me. And it's really hard not to see me. I'm 5'10". But, you know, that was my own perspective, right? I didn't expect to be seen. So, and then consequently, when you don't expect it, people walk by you like you're invisible.
Exactly.
Right? So when I shifted my energy, I noticed that this, you know, someone passing me on the sidewalk would look up and smile, and I'd smile back. When I was driving, a driver, you know, some other driver would stop and let me into the traffic. That never happened before. You know, get somebody opening the door for you. Are you kidding? Really? That's the kind of thing that happens when you shift inside you. Your energy shifts.
You know what? It is. Going up in New York City, it's a perfect defense mechanism because you really operate. I mean, anybody that's ever been to New York, especially if you work in New York like I did, anytime that you've been there, you develop a mechanism, and the mechanism is the reverse of what you shared.
Yes,
it is the mechanism that you want to be invisible. So you do this thing, and you're watching millions of people every day do this thing about invisibility so we never connect eye to eye. Not on the subway, nowhere. But it is a way of being. And what I found so fascinating about that is even growing up there, it is a way to be in the external environment, but it doesn't preclude you. It doesn't stop you from being different when you get home. And it's a fascinating phenomenon. It's like a switch that goes on. Now, here's the question. We have the ability to do that. And yet when it comes to fear, it's hard for us to accept that we have the ability to move out of the prison of fear.
Right.
And we can.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you were asking me for some advice, I would just say in a nutshell, which sounds kind of trite, but get out of your head and into your heart.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easier said than done, right? You know, because we live in this duality, right? We got light, dark, up, down, in, out, all of that, right? But I believe that we have this one major free will choice in this lifetime. And that's, do we resonate with this vibration of fear, or do we resonate with love? And I'm not talking about romantic love or sexual love. I'm talking about the unconditional love from source that is within us. We are all filaments of source.
Yeah.
You know, and what we do is we put all of these filters over our heads that we feel separate from that. And that's fear. Fear separates us from the light that we are.
And my gosh, it shows up everywhere. I mean, it's fascinating. I was having a conversation with somebody about rugs the other day, because I want to get, you know, some rugs for our office. And I have to be very mindful because we already have rugs, but, you know, to put rug on top of rug without people tripping on them. So for my office, so I'm looking at them and they were surprised at the color that I was looking at. And we got into this conversation.
What so, chakra was it?
Red. I love red rugs. Now I have a lot of Persian rugs. I there's a whole story behind the rugs that I have in the house. You know, part of the Afghanistan movement back in the 80s were the people of Afghanistan sold rugs to fund their freedom. And a number of the rugs I have were from people in Afghanistan. And there are that color. I love these red rugs. And so somebody said to me, well, you know, that's not a very good color. So this is where the fear comes up. And by the way, it's the year of the dragon. So I looked at a beautiful gold and red dragon rug. So this is where now everybody thinks I've lost my mind.
I don't.
But all it takes is one word. So how many of you have had these great ideas or really expressed your desire and somebody says to you, well, you know, Pat, red is going to block your prosperity. Now, in the moment, I stopped. Even though I knew that was not true. Definitely not in Asian cultures. Red gold rug, right? But in that moment, I stopped looking at red rugs. See, unconsciously, my unconscious brain took that in, stopped looking. Now, of course, I had an awakening about what I did. But see, isn't this how easy? Right. We can go from a point of freedom to a point of fear.
Right. Absolutely.
Over a rug.
Over a rug. It was so funny. I remember like my first kind of awakening kind of experience after this labyrinth thing. I was had cleared some stuff and I was walking through the park and the trees seemed so, oh, they were just gorgeous. They were just so vivid to me and alive. And I thought to myself, wow, the trees look so alive today. Everything looks so alive today. I heard literally in my mind, no, sister, you are more alive today.
Wow.
So that's how it feels to start walking a path towards joy and not be stuck in fear. I really do believe that if you wanted to do one thing to try to shift without doing anything else, start to practice this act of gratitude.
Oh, it's, there's nothing, there's no replacement for it.
Gratitude. I mean, what I mean by that is that the more we feel and express gratitude, the easier and more accessible joy is for us. And the longer we can hold it within us.
Yeah. You know? I love that we're talking about this at the end of the show, because this is really, this is a go-to for all of you. My coaching clients know, the people I work with, they know that the first thing I do when I meet them is I give them a gratitude assignment to write 70 times a day for 70 days. Thank you, whatever you believe in, God, spirit, universe, but write it 70 times a day. And after you write it over and over again, say, the first question I get is, what am I thanking God for? I'm just going to use God. What am I thanking God is for? And I said, you don't need anything to do that. Well, I do. And you say, no, I just want you to do it. But why? I said, do it for 10 days and then come back and ask me that question. The resistance that our ego so wants to keep us locked into that steel bar prison of fear that it won't even allow us to do a simple, simple exercise. Like 70 times for 70 days, right? Thank you, God, spirit, energy, universe, frog, I don't care what you think.
You know, I have a similar assignment. I have a similar assignment is to keep a gratitude journal. And yep. And that's, you know, that's just doing that every day, trying to find three things that you are or you can be grateful for or see as a blessing that happened in your day. And you can't cheat by using the same three things over and over again. But you know, even the smallest thing, you know, nothing earth shattering, like, hey, I made all the green traffic lights on my way to work today. I wasn't late for the first time. Whatever that is, something just small. But like I was saying before, you know, somebody opened the door for me and I had my hands full and it was great. That's a blessing. That's a gratitude. If the more you practice gratitude, the more easily you can access joy. And, you know, it's not like you can hold joy for a long, long time, but you can access it. You're like standing at the doorway, the portal to joy. And you can just, anytime you feel, oh, such gratitude, it's just like, comes in, the joy comes in, you know, and you don't have to be like this all the time. You know, that's not really, joy can be the serenity, this peace that comes in you, you know? So the phrase, the peace that passes understanding, you know, that's joy.
Yeah.
Joy can be felt in grief as well as uncertainty.
Yeah.
Happiness, you know, the difference between grief and happiness is something that's related to a situation or an event. It's a kind of a one-off kind of a feeling. You know, I got a new car. I'm really happy. You know what I'm saying? But joy is this really high frequency of love that the more you can, I mean, the hardest thing for me when I was doing this, Dr. Pat, was looking in the mirror and looking at my eyes and saying to myself, I love you. That was the hardest thing for me to do for such a long time.
It's still hard for so many people.
Oh,
and,
I know.
Yeah. And, you know, why is it so hard? Because the number one thing to be grateful about is ourselves.
Oh, and that's the fact that we were in this life, in this body. Yeah. Wow. We've got things, we've got ways to experience all of this visceral stuff.
Gratitude and fear cannot coexist in the same energy field.
They cannot.
I when that was first said to me, I tried. And I got to the point where it doesn't matter what shows up. It, you know, we have some great days here. I have some great days. I have some not so great days. And, you know, whether it's a blood test that comes back and you look at it and you're like, thank you, God. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see it. You can see so many different things that happen. And we have to find a way to help people plug into that frequency. And Ahata, thank you for today. I know this is what you do. I know this is the work you do to help people, but it is transformative work. You know, once that door is open and people can walk through it, and get to have that experience of joy, albeit moments of it, they want more. How do we find out more about you? And what's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today?
The spiral process is probably the most efficient way I've ever found to get the keys and unlock the door to your fear prison cell. It helps you identify the emotional programs that keep you stuck in a limiting belief and simply just delete it. These are often programs that the conscious mind has buried. But as I said before, the body and the inner child know where they are. When we're given repeated emotionally charged messages from our parents or other authority figures or friends around our self-worth, through example, like guilt or fear or shame, that begins a process of programming a belief that we're unworthy. And after a while, you actually may begin to believe these ideas and choose that to perceive your reality in that way. It has a different impact on your ability to feel joy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually offering, I'm opening my spiral container in April for individual spiral journeys, which are held online or in person, depending on where you are. In 8 weeks, we clear belief programming around 22 different
emotions.
Great.
That's
great. From the densest to the highest vibrations and back down again. It's a life-changing experience that one has to be fully committed to.
And you know what? You don't have to do it alone. And this is really, this is my message to everybody out there. I know we've been through a tough couple of years where we really had to step up and be by ourselves and be independent, make it happen. You don't have to do that anymore. And the fastest way to get to the path of freedom and joy is to take this journey with somebody that knows what they're doing. And that's Anahata. Thank you so much for this today. TheCrystalCoach.com. That's the best way to find out about you. Also, your show as well. Mm-hmm. And Crystal for those Coach of show. You, yep, please reach out. Give yourself the gift. If nothing else, have a conversation to see if you're ready to open the door to more joy. Thank you, Anahata. Thank you, Emily. Thank you so much to all of you out there. And again, remember, don't take the journey alone. None of us have done that. No. We'll see you next time.